my measure on success is leaving the place in a better position than when I found it. So I think that's a great measure of success, is gradual improvement. And that's what we're looking for. Like I said, the way the team finished the back end of the year, there's plenty to work with. And like I said, there's just a few minor adjustments. Should be playing some good football.
Yes, we are back. Welcome to What Would Brian Bevan Say? Season, I guess, 5.5. We're not quite into season 6. With me, as always, is Mr. Sankey.
Hello. Hello, Rob.
Now, are we going to mention the divorce? Are we going to bring it up? Because Mrs. Sankey has left you.
Well,
temporarily, I guess.
I'm not sure how temporary it is. Mrs. Sankey has run off halfway around the world, and every morning is being picked up by an ex-American Marine called Justin.
Oh, he sounds good looking.
An ex-American Marine who she refuses to send me a photo of, and they go to the coffee shop, then drive to work together.
This is how it starts. This is how it starts, Sam. This is how it starts. We should say that Mrs. Sankey is now living in Melbourne at the moment, but it could mean next year, Mr. Sankey, that we record the first episode of the new season from my pool, which might be nice, mightn't it?
I am looking forward to that. I have been offered by her. She comes back for Christmas.
Yeah.
If she can tear herself away from Justin.
Is he coming as well?
Hopefully not.
Right.
And then she goes back out in January until March. And I've been granted by her company a return ticket to Australia, although I've got to go economy class and she went business.
I noticed that in the email you sent me, they put in brackets economy. It was a bit passive-aggressive, that, I did think. But anyway.
It was.
It'll be good to have you, barbecue. It'll be great. Now, where's Dennis? Do we know where he is? The thing is, we're all on sort of tight schedules. We're leading into Christmas and we were kind of running out of dates to put this together. I've got my little one over in Fiji at the moment, so I'm picking her up tomorrow. I mean, your dates were fine, weren't they? You were pretty much free from now up until Mrs. Sankey comes home with the Marine.
Yeah, it's me and the dog until 4 days before Christmas. And then from early January until March, it's me and the dog.
Right, well, should we crack on then? Should we? I mean, it's going to be quite an easy one, this. I think we'll do news round and then we'll talk about the squad. And then we'll wrap it up with where we're going to finish. What do you reckon?
Absolutely perfect. But first of all, for the listener,
you're holding up a glass and it seems to have some kind of... Oh, it's got a reindeer on the front of your wine glass.
It's got a reindeer.
Does that hold half a litre or a litre, that glass?
I think it's old. I think it's a pint and a half.
Christ. Oh, dear.
Before that, John Craven's News Round.
Right, there we have it, the news round theme, and we'll move on to the stories. Not many to go through, but whilst the podcast has been away, Wigan earned their 6th Super League Grand Final victory, beating Catalans in a boring game at Old Trafford, 10 points to 2. Since the Super League format was launched back in 1996, only 4 teams have won the competition. Bradford with 4 titles, Wigan have 6, Leeds have won 8, and Saints out in front on 10. In comparison, since 1996, the NRL has seen 12 different teams win the NRL Grand Final. Came as a bit of a shock to me, that, when I looked up that stat, Sam. I thought, oh, it'd be about 6 or 7, but 12. And it probably sort of shows the depth in their competition compared to ours.
I think that shows how you hope a salary cap sport will work.
Balance
it
out.
It's not quite gone that way with us. I think probably because everybody can put a very good first 13 on the pitch in Super League. Mm. But as soon as you scratch below the surface, it has been particularly Wigan, Leeds and St. Helens who've got the youngsters who are almost at Super League level to come straight into the team, where there seems to be a big drop-off with everybody else.
I wonder if you sort of, I've not got the stats on this, but I wonder if you went back to when the English game was playing winter rugby, and so the talented Australians were coming over. Not the ones that were kind of the journeymen, or the ones that there was a bit of a narrative and a story behind of, oh, is this going to work? But ones that were solidly performing in the NRL, or the Winfield Cup as it was called then. Did we have more English team winners? Was there more than four between sort of 1960 and 96?
Oh, without a doubt. I've not got them in front of me. I think the whole landscape in this country changed when Wigan went full-time, when Maurice Lindsay went into Wigan. Mm. And they went full-time. And for a decade, they won almost everything.
Well, that was prior... That was pre-96, wasn't it?
Mid-80s. Mid-80s. And then we changed to Super League at the end of that era.
So looking at this, I mean, theoretically, there's only two teams we need to beat to win the comp, really. If you sat down as a team and said, right, you can forget your Hull KRs and your, you know, everyone else... It's essentially, looking at the four that have won it, well, Bradford aren't even there, so forget them. Leeds are kind of up and down a bit like us. So really, every year, you just have to beat Wigan and Saints.
Yes.
And I
want to bask in a little bit of glory that any listener can go back and hear our pre-recorded shows if they want to be asked. But I did call it early, after round 10... when we just played Wigan and Saints in consecutive weeks, I did say that Wigan were the best defensive team we'd played, and they just suffocated the opposition. Mm. And that's what happened in the final as well. I understand why you say boring rugby.
What, did you watch
bloody
it?
Hell, yes, I did. But on my laptop while cooking.
What were you having?
Mrs. Sankey, I was still interested in Mrs. Sankey then. She'd not met Justin, so she was watching Strictly Come Dancing.
Justin's probably just eating hot dogs and shit like that, isn't he, though? He's not five-star cordon bleu like you.
Apparently, he likes a lot of Asian food, a lot of sushi,
God, he sounds so well-rounded.
Vietnamese.
He sounds so well-rounded. I really like the sound of him.
He's done two tours in Afghanistan.
Has he? So he's tough as well, and he's got that emotional side. Just balance right. That's lovely.
But you know, Rob, once she's had the tough man's man.
What, your food?
Then she can come back to a considerate lover like me.
I did invite her up here a few weeks ago. We sent a little message to Mrs. Sankey, and she said she was busy. She didn't actually say what she was up to, but she said she read between the lines. England captain and Wire marquee player George Williams missed the first two matches against Tonga, having been given an extended ban following Warrington's playoff defeat by St. Helens. Williams was initially given a one-game ban for a shoulder charge, but having pleaded guilty to a Grade B charge, he then challenged the grading. His challenge was deemed frivolous, leading to a ban being doubled to two games. The frivolity of challenging... the panel is not working, Sam. Not working at all, is it? Shut your mouth up, take your medicine, and move on.
I think this is key. Actually, it's not hurt us at all. Although the Paul Vaughan one might have. It's not hurt us at all because he has used his bands up with the England squad. Actually, that's the point. Australia played a couple of internationals, and Paul Vaughan is qualified to play for Australia, so why can't he use his bands up with that?
Was that because he wasn't in the squad? Has he not been put in the squad? Because Australia's got about 700 props that they can pick from. That's probably why.
Maybe. But I do love the phrase frivolous.
Have you ever been frivolous? I bet Mrs. Sankey's been a bit frivolic and frivolous down there.
I've been extremely frivolous with my wallet once. Once I've had a drink or two, then the wallet comes out and I just buy frivolous things.
Is that frivolous or generous?
Both.
Okay. Right, fair enough. The England 24-man squad included five Warrington players in Matty Ashton, Ben Curry, Toby King, Danny Walker and George Williams, along with three former players of Daryl Clark, Chris Hill and Robbie Mulhern. It equated to that one third of the England squad had at some point worn primrose and blue at the Halliwell Jones. I mean, I can remember a time when we'd have no one in the one in the England setup. You know, I remember going back in the day, you know, I think at one time they picked Derek Fox before Andy Gregory when Gregory was playing for Warrington. I think Ronnie Duane used to get a run. But there was a time when we had none in at all.
Yeah.
And now, you know, they're all there. Does that say something about the England Test squad or what does it say about the game? I mean, there's a few in there that you kind of raise your eyebrow at, isn't there? I mean, Chris Hill, tremendous forward, but should he really still be there? Shouldn't there be someone knocking on the door to challenge him? And Robbie Mulhern?
Yeah. It looked bizarre, really, that so many Warrington and recent Warrington players were in the England team. But I suppose, does it mean that Shane Warne knows he can get more out of them than either Powell or previously Price did? Or was it because we had several injuries and actually what we've got at Warrington is, at the moment, the best of the rest?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yep.
Although I do need to say, Matty Ashton, when he got his chance, he stepped up. He did exactly what he's done all the way through this year.
Yeah.
He was given a chance. He shows he's improved and he didn't look out of place. He might do against Australia or New Zealand, but at that slightly lower level, he didn't look out of place at all.
I went to the World Cup final down at Wembley. Can't remember what year it was. There was only one try. Renoff scored. He went round Devra and scored. Mm. I think that was like 8-2 or something. It was very close.
We had an opportunity
close to the end, camped on their line, and we couldn't quite get over. But you look at that team, and if you sort of evolve that team into a modern-day team, I don't think there's any of that lot, really.
No.
Possibly Matty Ashton. I mean, not even Matty Ashton, I don't think, would. I can't remember who was on the wing that day, but not quite.
Jason Robinson.
Was he on the wing that? Was he not? Was that pre Robinson?
He was one of them because he trapped the ball in front of. We were in the Olympic Gallery.
Oh.
With Tetra Pak. Mrs. Sankey was working for a company called Tetra Pak then, and we'd bought £16 tickets just in the normal
marine
seats.
Marine based company?
No, Swedish. Oh. And she came back and said, we were offered tickets for something called the Olympic Gallery, but I said, we already had tickets. I said, you get back to work tomorrow, love. You get those Olympic tickets.
You tell us. Does this work that well?
And she did. And to be fair, she came home with the Olympic Gallery tickets.
Now, was that England or Great Britain? Who was that?
England, I'm going to say.
I think it was Great Britain.
No.
Oh, maybe. Okay. What year was it? What do we reckon? I'm looking it up to see what the team was.
Yeah.
I'll come back to it in a sec.
1990s at Wembley.
92, something like that. 10-6. Does that ring
a
bell?
That sounds about right.
1992. Wembley Stadium, 1992. 6-10 to Australia. 73,000. I can't see that. Match details. Does it have the team?
Put your glasses on.
Yes, it does. Yeah, so no Jason Robinson.
Want the same game then? 100% Jason Robinson.
Hang on, this is a different...
Tried to trap it before me.
I've got Lydon Hunt, Gary Connolly, Gary Schofield, Martin Afire, Edwards, Fox, Kevin Ward, Martin Dermott, Andy Platt, Dennis Betts, Phil Clark and Ellery Hanley. And I'm saying it was Devra that he went round. Yeah, well, John Devereux was on the bench with Alan Tait, Kelvin Skerritt and Richard Ayres.
Well, I tell you what, Rob, just go back to that back line, whether we've got this right, the same game or not. Just go to that back line and just tell us what those two centres was, because one of them was Gary Connolly.
The centres were Connolly and Schofield, but I have a funny feeling Connolly went off and Deborah came on.
Just think about that. Connolly and Schofield. And think of Super League right now. And think of what two centres, because, to be fair, for several years, the St. Helens Centre, forget his name now, what's his name? Anyway, the St. Helens Centre has been, Percival has been excellent in scoring, but he's not a patch on Connolly or Schofield, is he? And no, you mentioned Ellery Hanley, what a player.
Yeah, I'm looking at this here. It says Steve Renoff went into a gap not covered by replacement Lions centre, John Devereux. There you go. So it's the game, and we were called Great Britain.
Well, I'm going to look up which one I was at then, because I'm convinced the World Cup I was at.
I think you're going for. I think you're talking Jonathan Davis.
Forward in time.
Yeah, Jonathan Davis was Robinson. You've moved on. You've moved on.
But there you go. There you go. Jonathan Davis and Jason Robinson. Anybody in the current? Well, Davis, to be fair, is Welsh. But anyone in that England team better than those two?
Robbie Mulhern. England went on to win the Test series 3-0, winning 22-18 at St Helens, 14-4 at Huddersfield. And 26-4 at Leeds. I had a quick look at the Tongan team. They were missing several players. However, I don't know who these players are. So I'm sure every team misses players. But I don't know, really. Was it a good Tongan team? Was it? I mean, I just don't know. I don't know the level and the quality of the Test series, what it was like. I didn't really see it apart from the tries.
I think a bit like France, Tonga are better than France, but a bit like France, if you're playing Tonga in the Southern Hemisphere, they're a slightly different proposition than playing them in the autumn in Northern England.
They had quite a few players in that side that were playing Super League. And that's why I thought, is this their best team? There's a lot that weren't there that play NRL. I was surprised that they were picking... Anyway, I don't know. I didn't really watch it too much. Warrington have agreed a player dual registration scheme with Widnes. The agreement will allow Wyre to send youth players and first team players not selected over to wear the black and whites of the Chemics in the Betfred Championship. Never recovered from the days of John Devereux and Jonathan Davis and Alan Tait. That was the end of them, really. They overspent and they never came back. Which is a shame, a real shame. So we got any sort of... We'll move on to the squad in a bit. So when we move on to the squad, we'll maybe have a look at who's going to be heading down the road to Widnes.
I'll just say that it could work well for us, but I'm not a fan. I know why it's there, but I'm not a fan of the dual reg. Go for a week, come back, go for another week, come back. I'm not a fan of that.
The competition's so diluted now, isn't it? They're running out of quality players. So, you know, I don't think there was too many... When it was the first division, there was too many teams sending players to the second division teams. You know, they were all part-time and playing rugby.
And the reserve competition isn't as good anymore. That's why dual reg is attractive for the Super League teams.
Yeah. Betfred Super League 2023 Young Player of the Year went to 21-year-old Josh Foulis, the young back that joined Wyre from amateur Oldham club side Waterhead Warriors. Foulis has already played 60 first-team games for Warrington with a strike rate of 38%. Good find, good player. He's got a brother who has a similar attitude, who possibly might start sneaking in to the first team, maybe not this year, but in a couple of years. Well done, Josh Thulis.
Yes, here. And you've used the word good there. Last season, he played 21 games for us. He scored 8 tries. You cannot fault the commitment and the effort this lad gives.
Mm.
And I suppose the thing is now, I mentioned Matty Ashton a couple of times earlier. I suppose the thing is, Josh, 21, going on 22, can he take that next step from a good young player? Because when you're a young player, and of course when you've come through the ranks, they tend to be given a little bit more leeway by the crowd.
Mm.
But can he take that next step from... And if he could, actually, I do feel that because he can play wing, because he can play fullback, you've touched on the idea that maybe he could even fill in at centre.
Mm.
He could be our next Stephen Ratchford, i.e. he's worth his weight in gold because he can fill in holes in the... He's a good player who can fill in holes in the squad.
Yeah. Yeah. I worry a bit about Josh, that he just... he is too brave. He is too committed, because I'm a bit worried about those concussions that are going on with that young lad. He's had one too many concussions for my liking at his age. And I really think you have to just watch that a little bit. At some point, you either need to stop sticking your head where it shouldn't go, or... I don't know. I just worry that... I mean, that strike rate of 38%, I'd like to know his strike rate on concussions. Is it, you know, every 10 games he's concussed? He seems to be getting knocked about a bit. But anyway.
There was a series of about 5 games in a row where he went off the field for 10 minutes for a concussion test. You're right.
Gee, right. Wires 2024 kit has been released, and I've got a few pictures on the screen there for you, Sam, of the kit. Now don't
recognise those two players.
Don't mention the red disc on the front, because Dave Birch is a fan of it. I don't know if you know this. He's a real fan of the red disc. He always reiterates the point that we had Spartamatic blazoned across the front in red as well. So don't mention the red disc. What do you think of the kit?
For me, it's not this kit, it's most kits, and it's most kits in rugby league.
Oh.
I'm not a huge fan of the way we've done this jagged V. I know it's meant to echo the badge and things like that, but I can live with that.
What, the yellow bit at the top?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it's meant to echo the badge.
Is it?
What I can't be doing with all kits, what I'd love is... not to have the zigzags down the side, not to have the flashes on the shorts.
You want to go retro, don't you? You want a retro 70s. That's what you're after, Vivian Westwood.
Yes, yeah. The red logo doesn't bother me too much because...
Have you got a Hoover? Have you got a Hoover?
No, I've got a Shark.
I might do a little poll on what actual vacuum cleaners Warrington fans have to see if it... Because we've got a Dyson...
Yeah.
We've got a couple of Dysons. We've got no Hoovers. My mum had a Hoover in the 1970s.
Yeah, we did too. But can I do a little bit of listen a poll straight away, or actually present a poll? Give me about 15 seconds.
Right, he's off. He's moved. He's taking his Bluetooth headphone. He's run. He's still running. I should just point out at this moment that Sammy's very lonely at the moment. Mrs. Sankey's gone away. I know he touched on the nerve of the Marine, but it's actually quite cutting. And I think we all need to be careful how we...
I'm back.
I mate, just talking about the kit. Just talking about the kit.
Yeah. We have a Hoover washing machine.
Oh, that's a good point, isn't it? That's a good point.
I couldn't remember if it was Hot Point or Hoover. We have a Hoover washing machine.
We went round we had a little bit of a tour here in Sydney a few months ago now. We went to some kind of water refinery. It's like on a dam, and it's where all the scientists hang out to discover the ocean tides and how much plastic's in the sea, etc. And we went into one room, and they would have had at least 20 washing machines all on these sensors. And I said, oh, what are you doing here? And they're saying, oh, we're just working out how much, plastic goes into the sea from washing machines. And they were all, is it Miele? Is that what they're called?
Don't know.
Fancy one. I said, oh, where'd you get your washing machines from? And they said, we wrote to every washing machine manufacturer, seeing if they would donate washing machines to us for the good of the earth and, you know, the good of the planet. Not one of them. They'd have to buy them all. So, there you go. There is talk about the badge being under the armpit. I've heard a lot of people say that the badge is under the armpit. It's not quite on the chest. So, I mean, they may be working on the assumption that, you know, a lot of people have man tits that watch Warrington, so it probably will sit on the breast. But for anyone with an athletic physique, it's under the armpit. So, we'll have a look at that and see.
I won't be buying one, anyway.
The away kit, Canberra Raiders. So, are we trying to tempt someone over from Canberra Raiders to play for us? Is that what's
going on there? It's not the same green. I'm not having that. What kind of green's that?
Pistachio.
That's a good shout. Yeah, I like that pistachio ice cream green.
I had an apartment in Sydney, and I painted the bedroom, painted the bathroom green like that. And when they came to sell it, they said, "Oh, we need a good word for the green." And I said pistachio, and she said, "Oh, that's we're going to use that again." So there you go, pistachio green. What's the other one? Is it avocado green? Yeah. Leeds United Elland Road will host Super League's Magic Weekend in 2024. The showpiece event, which was first held back in 2007, will take place on the weekend of the 17th and 18th of August. The event's been pushed back this year, not to fall in line with the Challenge Cup. Elland Road becomes the sixth ground to stage the event, following the event being staged at Cardiff's Principality Stadium, Edinburgh's Murrayfield, Manchester's Etihad Stadium, Liverpool's Anfield and Newcastle's St James's Park. Wire will take on Leeds Rhinos on the Saturday evening fixture. The Magic Weekend will be played as round 22 of the Super League season. Now, I mean, it's nice round there, isn't it, round the back of Elland Road? A lot of sort of artisan bakeries and cafes and clubs, and I think there's a few museums, and it should have a really nice feel to it. Apparently, IMG wanted to get rid of it full stop, so they possibly can't blame them.
No.
But it's another home fixture for Leeds, almost.
Yeah. I'm actually in two minds here. I actually think, as a venue, as a place to go to, Leeds is very good.
Middle.
Now, I know people will... Yeah, I know people will suggest we should be taking it to other places like Cardiff, Murrayfield, Newcastle, but as a place to congregate, Leeds is very good. Although Elland Road does leave a little bit to be desired, and I won't be there because that's the weekend I take my car. I pick up Laura Hamilton on the way as I drive through Surrey, and I go looking to buy a place in France.
Well, talking of France, I mean, you're nearly there. I think they should take the Magic Weekend to Jersey.
You've been a big fan of this, haven't you?
I reckon. Bergerac. Is John Nettle still alive? Is he still hanging on? Has he gone a bit right-wing?
When he was doing Midsummer Murders, he looked like he was ready to pop off at any point, didn't he? He looked like his blood pressure was up then. Can we do a bit of Googling?
I'm going to check, Hey Siri, is John Nettles still alive? Yeah, I think he's still going. Yeah, let me have a look. Wikipedia. He's 80. He's 80. Oh, so dust him off.
He
went to the University of Southampton, like your missus.
Yeah, Plymouth. You know, she's Plymouth.
Oh, Plymouth. Sorry.
Right. It's South Coast, though, not far off. He could bring the ball on, and he could do a ceremonial kickoff, couldn't he?
He's had four prominent roles in TV. I'll go back through them, see if you can work out which one it was. So, Midsummer Murders he did from 1997 to 2011. Mm-hmm. He did Robin of Sherwood in 1985. And he was Bergerac.
Did he?
He was John Nettles in Bergerac. He was Jim Bergerac in Bergerac between 81 and 91. But what comedy sitcom was he in between 1972 and 1976?
72 to 76, bloody hell. Ain't Half Hot Mum? Live of Birds.
Yeah, he was in the Live of Birds.
Bloody hell.
So move it to Jersey. Everyone could go down there, have a nice weekend. Or I thought possibly the Isle of Man.
No.
You know, no, not happy with that?
No.
Why? What's wrong with that one? What? No.
Well, I think it's best encapsulated if anyone wants to Google the Fast Show, Isle of Man.
Right.
They'll just you know, that just encapsulates the Isle of Man.
My mum and dad went to the Isle of Man because my mum's got ancestry in the Isle of Man. And they spent a day in the library trying to research the family tree of my mum. And they kept running into dead ends. It wasn't working. So then they spoke to someone in the library and they said, unfortunately, the problem is everyone's into bread. So it's very hard
very
to find...
Very good bakers.
So there you go. So happy days. Which is why I've got 3 years.
Actually, rather frighteningly, my mum and dad went on honeymoon to the Isle of Man.
Did
and
they?
Took, and my mum's parents, my grandma and granddad,
went with them.
Went
really?
With them. Yeah. It's a bit scary, isn't it?
Wish I'd gone with my daughter to Fiji this week. She's an absolute ball in Fiji. She's on Treasure Island. It's in the middle of nowhere. Tell you what. Although she has contracted COVID yesterday, so half the island's come down with COVID. There's 200 of them on the island. 100 of them have got it. So there you go. Right. On to the rule changes. Now, I've put 3 bullet points by these, Sam. I think there are a few more that fall within the rule changes, but the 3 main ones I've got is that rather than a 6 again, a team will concede a penalty for any offence that takes place in the opposition's own 40-metre area.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently a lot of teams were just sort of holding down, knowing that they'd give another 6 again, but they could in that moment get composed again. So you've got a shot to have a crack at goal now if you want, I guess.
This will delight, or half delight, one of the lads I go to the match with, because in particular he used to get wound up when coming out of your own half, as you say, there was a lot of holding down and slowing up in the first and second tackle. Oh. And he used to shout, "Bet, is that your dog barking?"
Well, you know what? I mean, your dog used to bark when there was a contentious issue. And I think my dog is the rule changer. So I've got the window open because it's 30 degrees today. And the dog's outside and it's barking the minute we mention the 6 again rule. So I have a funny feeling it's not going to go well. That's
but
what it could
I
be.
I do think at least the opportunity to go for 2 points will be is more beneficial than an extra tackle. All right, if it's 5th tackle and they hold you down and you get another 6, that's very beneficial. But if it's the 1st tackle and you get an extra 6, you're only getting one extra tackle. So the opportunity to decide, do you kick for touch, do you kick for goal? It's more beneficial for the attacking team.
Are we splitting the game up, though? Because surely, shouldn't a penalty decision lead to the same option anywhere on the field, rather than we're suddenly drawing lines here?
I think that's a difficulty. That's where you're going to need good refereeing. The idea of this 6 again, as far as I understood it, was those people who were just messing about a bit at the play of the ball and just niggling and just sort of gamesmanship, not proper penalties, that's where they were being penalised. But sometimes they're almost being dragged down and the referee's just waving 6 again when it's a proper penalty. So,
okay.
So a bit of clarity there, but why is it a penalty in one part of the pitch but not in the other?
Yeah, that's what I'm worried about. Now, are you sitting down?
Well, can I...
Are you sitting down?
Well, I've got a big request. So you say your piece and then I've got a big request.
Right, have a little drink as well. Have a little drink. Get your breathing right. Get your breathing right. Okay, right, he's got... Oh, gee, did you finish that already? Christ.
Yeah.
There's half a bottle in there.
You've been speaking a lot.
Okay, here we go. Refs are to clamp down on incorrect play of the balls. A genuine attempt must now be made for the player to touch the ball with their foot. The defensive line will only be allowed to move up and defend once the ball carrier has touched the ball with his foot.
Right. I'll say this, and then perhaps you could edit it and put a little soundbite in. You know, as maybe put in.
Do you know? I wasn't missing Dennis until this moment.
But you could put the soundbite of the choir at Westminster singing.
Hallelujah! 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 Hallelujah!
Absolutely bloody brilliant! About frigging time.
Well, can I put a little caveat in at this point?
Caveat away.
I don't like the word genuine attempt. It's very nondescript. How do you say what's genuine and what's not? Yeah. Why don't you just make the rule you have to put your foot on the ball? Because this genuine attempt bollocks leads it open to interpretation. I mean, I watch Strictly every week, Sam, and as you know, I've been really annoyed at the marking.
Because
the marking is open to opinion, isn't it? You know, you've got those two young lads, the one from Bad Education. Fantastic. Every week, 10. And you've got Craig Greville Driveway on the end, giving it a 9. And I think this is the same. You know, one referee goes,
I don't think that was a genuine attempt, actually, so I'm going to give a penalty.
Whereas the next one's going to be like, I think that was a genuine attempt. Just make it put your foot on the ball.
Correct. I think this is a step in the right direction.
To step over it or to actually put your foot on it?
Yeah, to actually put your foot on it. Because that, after all, is in the rules. But then again, the rules do say something like either to place or drop the ball onto your heel to play the ball. And if anyone drops the ball onto the heel to play it, that's a knock-on these days.
Andy Gregory used to do that. I mean, Andy Gregory used to drop it from about half a metre every time onto his foot. Yeah. Alan Langer did as well.
Yeah.
So, right, well, good luck with that.
Rob, as long as they uphold it, and as long as they don't just do it for the first 5 weeks of the season, then it is a step in the right direction.
Okay. Genuine attempt. Write that down.
Just a minute. I'll just spell it G-E-U.
And also around the play of the ball, the defending markers must now stand directly opposite the attacker, with the second marker standing right behind the first marker and not from several steps back.
Yeah.
So all hugging up close together. There's going to be a lot going on at the play of the ball this year. It worries me that you've not got two referees on the paddock. So, I mean, it's hard enough as it is watching players creep offside and everything that's going on a field of rugby league to have so much going on. Also, it says the defensive line will only be allowed to move up and defend once the ball carrier has touched the ball. It doesn't say the defensive line will be allowed to move up and defend once a genuine attempt has been made to touch the ball.
But although you've just driven a truck through a slightly large hole in the rules, that has been the rules for years. You cannot, or you're not meant to move until the ball's played.
But you're only allowed to move up apparently when the ball has been touched by the foot, not if it's a genuine attempt. So I'm working on the assumption now that if you just genuinely attempt to put your foot on the ball, the defensive line's going to be offside the whole time if they move up.
Yeah, that'd be interesting, wouldn't
it? Yeah. Right, well, I think we're done. Have we got any more news? Anything else you want to add? Or are we going to suddenly take this 2024 squad apart?
Well, yes, I think we should.
Okay, all right. I'll read it out. Deep breath. Here we go. So, played for Wire in 2023 that remain in the squad are Matt Duffy, Josh Thulis, Stefan Ratchford, Matty Ashton, George Williams, Josh Drinkwater, James Harrison, Danny Walker, Paul Vaughan, Ben Curry, Matty Nicholson, Joe Philbin, Leon Hayes, Joe Bullock, Connor Wrench, Sam Cassiano, Gil Dudson, Matty Russell, Lucas Green, Luke Thomas, Adam Holroyd, and Tom Whitehead. Players that have departed are Peter Metautier, Daryl Clark, Josh Maguire, Thomas McAley, Greg Minikin, Riley Dean, and also Aidan Doolan and Jack Derbyshire, although neither of those players played in 2023. The new signings are Toby King, Lachlan Fitzgibbon, Roderick Tye, Zane Musgrove, Jordan Crowther, however he did play on loan for us last season, Brad Dwyer, Wesley Brunez, I don't know if I'm saying that correctly, and 32, Sam Powell. Players that didn't play in 2023 but remain in the squad are Josh Lynch.
Try that again.
Jesus. How are you going to be with that one?
I know. Josh Jake, Lynch.
And Jake Thulis, both are backs. Academy additions are Zach Bardsley-Rowe, he's a winger, and Nolan Toupe, as he will now be known. He was a second row forward. Removed from the squad, but that remain at the club, are Jamie Redcliffe and Bobby Shingler, both props. Right, where do we start, Sam? Are we starting with a conclusion? Are we going to go through them one by one? Should we look at the departed compared to the signings? Well, what do you want to do?
I've as you've gone through there, the existing players, I've made a little mark in four of them that I've got question marks against.
Oh, right, okay.
So played for Wyatt in 2023.
Yeah.
I've got a question mark in Stephen Ratchford. A favourite of mine over years.
Yeah.
Still got ability, worried about his lack of pace.
Right.
Okay.
We didn't have any pace last year, so...
No, I know. That's why I've still got a question mark. Okay. But bags of ability, it depends where he's going to play and how often.
Right.
Josh Drinkwater has got ability.
Did he play for us last year?
Has got ability, seems to turn up one game in four.
Oh.
So that's my question mark on him.
Mm.
Sam Cassiano, when he's on form, he's great. When he's not on form, he's awful.
Right. Has he got a map to witness?
Yeah. And Gil Dudson, very disappointed with him.
Right. Okay.
So,
well, to balance it out, I will say that I've also put a mark next to players that I believe are coming into their four. Players that will be better this year.
Yes.
That weren't. I mean, still were very good players last year, but I think he could go up another notch this year. So I think looking at that, I think we might get a bit more of a song out of Matt Duffy under Burgess.
Yes.
Josh Thulis is another one that should improve and fill out a bit more. Matty Ashton, probably at his peak, but will continue at his peak. James Harrison, after a run of not having too many injuries. Matty Nicholson, I think, is another one that could fill out and be... And he's also been given the number 13, so whether he's going to play at lock, loose forward, we'll wait and see. Connor Wrench had a few years of discombobulation in that team and not really been in favour with Powell.
Yeah. Can he make this next step again?
And that's kind of it. And then obviously like Lucas Green, Luke Thomas, Adam Holroyd and Tom Whitehead should also all improve. So there's a lot
they're
in
all
there.
They're all a year older and they should all be a bit bigger.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's a good point on every single one of them. Yes, I agree with you.
But I'm kind of the same with you. I don't think Ratchford will, even though he's been given number four, will hold on to that shirt. I don't think he will be our leading centre. So I feel that he can be used as a utility player and have a sensible head, which leads to me to think that the captaincy will move away from Ratchford because he won't be on the field enough, which is a good thing because I don't think he's been a very forthright captain. We've spoke about him and people have mentioned that when Warrington have been on the back foot and they're all standing together in a group, he's not mouthing off at anyone. He's a bit reserved, he's Stephen.
He's
Ratchford,
moaning to the referee. That's why he's not mouthing off at everyone else.
And Ben Curry, hopefully he just comes a bit better than he did last year. I don't think he was used enough last year. I don't think the ball went his way enough last year. But I would like to see a little more, few more carries from Curry.
I agree. You know I'm a fan, but he's a certain type of player. He isn't going to give us Ben Westwood drive, so we need to use him to the best of his abilities rather than ask him to do something he's not great at.
I mean, I would, if we had another second row forward, and I think we've got enough centres now to fill anyway, but I would actually prefer, if I had to leave one of those two in the team, I'd prefer Curry at centre than Ratchford.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
But anyway, so that's the one.
So and did then, Shane Warne for England.
The other ones that just stand out are just kind of the ones that you've mentioned. Dudson, I think, will spend a lot of the year at Widnes. If one of the other... Are we still short of props, though, Sam? That's the trouble. You send him off to Widnes. Who's coming in? You know, you're looking at the likes of Luke Thomas? I don't know.
Well,
but
when we look at who we've signed, it depends how much game time Fitzgibbon, Musgrove and Crowther are going to play. So we'll come on to them in a minute.
All right.
But,
the one that stands out for me, and I'm at a wash, pardon the pun, is Josh Drinkwater, who, looking through his record, and I went back through the script from last year and we mentioned about just how many teams he's played for and what a journeyman he's been. And how we spoke to the lads over at the Hull KR podcast and they said, he'll play great for the first few games and then he'll disappear. And I think that kind of fits what he did for us. He did start off all right.
Yeah.
But
I think,
doesn't
I think
go demanding
you're
100% the ball.
Right. You see some of the things he does and the class, some of the things, but he doesn't do it enough. So... Yeah. And this seems to be, we've only seen him last year, but as you say, when you listen to where he's been before, people talking about, it seems to have been a repeating thing. So is Sam Burgess going to put a rocket up his arse? Is that what he needs? Mm. Or does he need that? Is he that type of player that needs the proverbial arm round the shoulder to coax it out of him? But there's a player in there, but we can't go through another year with him only turning up at top form one game in four.
Yeah,
he's got to be three games in four.
We won't mention what was said, but we did have a very nice message from Daryl Powell at the end of when he left the club. And he summarised a very nice message for us about what he thought about the team. And there was a lot in that message that he sent through that we already knew, didn't we? It kind of fitted with what we had been saying all year. Kind of leave it at that, but it kind of fits all with what we've said, that there's a lot of youth in this team that has really tried, but there's a few at the other end that need to pull their finger out.
Yeah. I think, Rob, as well, I think to be fair to Daryl, because he was very good with us, with you, with his messages, I think to be fair to him, he wasn't blaming them. He was partially blaming himself for not being able to change it and coax it out of people. So let's be fair there. But he was saying one or two people, really, he was saying one or two people need to be better week in, week out, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Really.
He was. I think you mentioned last year on the pod at one point, Sam, about you didn't think Daryl got it too wrong.
No.
And I'm in agreement with that. It just didn't... They just turned on him. But he did really try and go through that squad and send a lot of them on their way. But he never really got them together.
I do feel that. I feel the first half of it, I feel he definitely recognised what he needed to do, but then wasn't able to do it and take them with him.
Yep.
They turned against rather than him taking them with him.
Yeah.
Rather than him taking him with him. Yeah.
Okay, on to the departed players in comparison to the new signings that have come in. There's two that I would have... Well, there's definitely one I would have liked to have kept and another one that I've got a question mark with based on age and also what he wants to be paid. But Peter Metautier has never been a fan at Warrington. His best days were at Castleford or at Newcastle. They weren't with Warrington. He offered very little. Apparently very good off the park with organising the, you know, Rotary Club and the Trivial Pursuit nights. But there wasn't much going on the field. The two that strike me as losses out of that list of Metautier, Clark, Maguire, McCailey, Minnick and Dean, Doolan and Derbyshire is Tom McCailey. He's the one I would have liked to have kept. Sam's now holding up a piece of paper. I can't see what it says. It's very white.
Okay. It was I've ticked Tom McCailey on that.
Have you washed that piece of paper in DAS or something? I nearly got welder's arc then when you held that up to the screen.
Jesus. Personal automatic.
Does that still exist, welder's arc? Is it like Veruca's? Does it not happen anymore?
I have no idea.
Tom McCailey, and the other one then, the question mark next to, is Darryl Clark, who I saw Saints this week were ironing his name onto the back of his shirt. And I think he's currently in Mexico, sunning himself. Yeah. So
do we both follow his Instagram then?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Although I've had a real rinse on social media, I've rinsed. Apologies to everyone who follows us on Twitter or X as it's now called. But I was waking up every morning to about 5% of the followers who are incredibly right-wing and racist. So fuck off, all of you. And I just stopped following everyone. So don't hold anything against it. We've just kind of deleted all the followers because it was having issues with my mental health looking at some of that was being posted. So we've eradicated that. And I've allowed myself 5 minutes a day on Instagram. And then it cuts me off. That's it. So it's working.
Oh, very good.
Working well.
I think I'd need about 15 minutes because my shits take longer than 5 minutes.
Right, the guys that have come in. So Toby King now.
Right.
Is he going to be still sulking or is it all going to be okay?
Okay.
Like, where are we at with Toby King?
I was interested that you put him as a new signing and I think that is the way to look at Toby King, because he's never not been our player, but obviously he's not really been there for nearly 2 years.
Yeah.
I think this is a fresh start for Toby King.
Mm.
I am very happy he's in the squad. As far as I understand it, under the new rules, whilst we're paying a lot for his services, he doesn't count very much on the salary cap. Because you can offset him coming through your youth team and surely he'll be the one. So in salary cap standards, he will be excellent if he's got his head on. Because I always thought he's a good centre. My argument has always been that he's a good centre that we're playing excellent money for.
Mm.
So, yeah. Strong, big, not the fastest, but experienced. He should be confident. He should be super confident after just winning a Super League winner's medal, ring rather. Mm. I wonder whether if he brings his ring into training, people are, oh yeah, well done, Toby. Or they smack his face in for showing off.
When I was at Wigan. How many times a week do you think he's going to say it? When I was at Wigan.
Yeah.
Well, he's been given the number three, so he's going straight in there by the looks of it.
Yeah.
He's going to be in at the centre.
And just on last year's performance and the fact that he is a current Super League champion, he is undoubtedly first choice to be in the season.
Right. And you're putting him in the centre, not second row?
No, centre.
Right. Lachlan Fitzgibbon. Now, here is a second row forward.
Hmm.
Now, I think the other day, Sam, I sent you a nice little video. I was up in Newcastle for the day.
You were.
And every time I go to Newcastle, New South Wales, it rains. I don't know why. I just seem to have had a... Every time I go up there, there's a big US military base just north of Newcastle. I used to do a fair bit of work for them. And it's a stunning part of the world. Salamander Bay. Incredible when you're up there. Beautiful. But this time I was in Newcastle, which is actually Newcastle. So it was very grim. It was very grey. But one thing I did notice was that there's still a fair bit of money knocking about. So, you know, a lot of Teslas driving around, a lot of Porsches. It was all happening. And then every fourth person I walked past seemed to be on methadone. And I think it has a similar feel to Warrington. It's got both ends of the spectrum. So I think he might fit in okay. I don't think he'll be too homesick.
And don't you feel you are, I'm talking about my perception, you're on the ground there. I think Newcastle, Australia and Newcastle, England have a lot in common in that they're both a bit removed from the posh Sydney set. Mm. They've both got some rugged countryside around them, and bays and Long Beach. Yeah. Both a bit crappy weather compared to
Newcastle's
Sydney.
Got good weather. It's just the fact that I just seem to go there when it rains. I got up there. I was up there about 8 o'clock, and I was in wasn't too far from Charlestown, a little bay called Cardiff on the bay, and I was itching for a shit. So I had a shit in Aldi. It's the only place that was open. Oh, I'll tell you what. Do you ever follow Jackson Pollock art? Because let's just say something.
You're thinking you could have took a photograph and made it into millions of pounds.
But I did have a quick look in the real estate window, the estate agents, and a variety of property. I mean, waterfront, we're looking about 2.6 to 3 million. But then you can get a shitty Fibro for 600 grand. So about £400,000. So there's a lot of money up there. Affluent town because of the coal. They export more coal around the world than anywhere else. So you're
thinking if he gets the right place in Stockton Heath, he could settle in nicely.
He'll be happy.
Yeah. Well, last year he made 21 appearances for the Knights, scored 5 tries. I followed him because in our NRL fantasy team, the lad I sit next to had him in his team. So I was always comparing. His average stats, very, very good. He's a workhorse.
Right.
He's a workhorse. So he could be, particularly with Nicholson moving to 13.
Yeah.
He could add, we need him to stay fit, of course, but he could add a lot to us. I'm quite excited about him.
Let's sort of equate them back to who's gone then. So Toby King, better option than Peter Metautier. Yeah.
Yes.
Tick. And then the second one, Lachlan Fitzgibbon, better than Josh Maguire, who turned out to be an unmitigated disaster.
Correct.
So,
100%.
Fitzgibbon will keep his mouth shut and should be able to be good for us. Alan London, God bless him, who turned 148 this week, he thinks he's the best dummy runner in the NRL.
Oh, does he?
Doesn't get his hands on the ball much, but he's very happy to participate in a move to the left. I'll just run the dummy angle. So
that will be okay if we actually do run some dummy lines. But I tell you who was very good at that on a regular basis, Trent Waterhouse.
Yes.
Now, whether Fitzgibbon is quite that standard of player, I don't know how many times, if at all, he's played for New South Wales. Looking at this, he's not. But a similar sort of player, big, tall, athletic. If he's 95% the player of Trent Waterhouse, he'll be good.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, we'll wait and see what happens. I mean, just based on that, how many players have Warrington had? This could be a quiz question, and Dennis will send you a nice prize. How many players have had H2O in their name? So we've had Trent Waterhouse, Josh Drinkwater. Are there any more H2Os in the squad? Right, so that's an upgrade. Now, Roderick Tye. Now, I've spent a bit of time. Well, I say I spent a bit of time. I spent about 20 minutes. Knocked on to KO Sports. Was able to watch the Queensland Cup or whatever it's called. And went looking for Roderick Tye. Didn't play every game, but I watched a couple of his games on Fast Forward when he kind of had the ball. Like most PNG players, built like an absolute brick wall, head of rock. He's tough. Reminds me a little bit of kind of a cross between, I don't know, like he's a little bit, who can I put him like? He's a bit like Matty Russell and maybe and maybe Brad Dwyer. You're never quite breathing out and having a sigh of relief until he's played the ball. There's a lot going on. It's frenetic. From the minute he gets the ball, he's a, you know, he's a bit like four to bring him down, but all those metres he's just made could all disappear when he tries to put his foot on his ball and he kicks it 20 yards forward, or it doesn't get to his feet.
He doesn't need to put his foot on the ball. He just needs to make a genuine attempt.
Well, oh, God love him. He definitely tries to make an attempt. Genuine attempt. I mentioned this, I think, last year. He's got an issue with some kind of invisible players. He can. Do you remember the horse? That I think it was the Queen Mother's horse in the Grand National that did the splits.
It did in the home run.
Because it thought it was jumping the water jump. That's what it didn't have. That's why they have blinkers on. It didn't have blinkers on, and it saw the water jump out of the left of its eye from the first lap and tried to jump the water. What was its name? I have a funny feeling that, well...
Wasn't Crisp, was it? Was it
no, Crisp was the Australian that was carrying 12 stone and Red Rum running him down in 1973.
Ah, right, okay.
Okay, yeah, yeah. But yeah, whoever it was, he's got a little bit of that feeling that he may just jump invisible water jumps when he's on the field. But I like the sign of him. I think this is... It could. The reason it hasn't worked from the NRL and he's never played an NRL game is I don't think he's consistent through the 80 minutes. And I think that fuck up of playing the ball or falling over the invisible water jump costs him a place in the NRL. But he could fit nicely into Super League.
I've got a question mark against him. Simply because. No, simply because I've not got a clue what we're getting. And at age 25, I'd have expected him to at least play a handful of
Well, that's why he doesn't, though, because he's erratic.
NRL games. So we'll see. But he's going to bring energy. He's going to bring, hopefully, excitement and toughness. And going off what you're suggesting, looking at those who've departed, is he an upgrade on Greg Mannequin?
Is he an upgrade on Greg? Yeah, massive upgrade. Massive upgrade.
Right, so, big tick.
Devon Locke was the horse that...
Devon Locke, yes.
Now,
yes.
For a secondary bonus point here, Sam, and I'll give you a
the
clue.
The rider, the jockey...
Was an author. He was an author. Went on to be a very famous author.
And he also presented on BBC, and he's got dark hair, and I can't remember who he was.
Dick Francis.
Yes. Dick Francis, that's right.
We're having a great time, aren't we, without Dennis? I tell you what. Exactly.
And now it's ESB taking up the challenge as Eagle Lodge drops back. But Devon Locke's going strongly at jump 29 and he looks to the crowd as though a royal win's a certainty. Into the final straight with victory in sight for Devon Locke. He's clear away from ESB and Gentle Boyer. Only 40 yards to go. Devon Locke can't lose. But he slipped. He's down. ESB streaks past to win by 10 lengths, with Gentle Boyer second and Royal Tan third. Devon Locke's on his feet again, but it's too late. The most tragic defeat in Grand National history.
Do you think he'll listen to this? Do you think he'll actually listen, download and listen to this?
I don't know. Where is he tonight? Is he out?
Yes, he's out with Mrs. Waywell.
Okay. Love to Dennis. Sending love to Dennis. Hopefully he'll listen to it. So, right, there we go. Zane Musgrove. Now, we did mention him last year. Neither of us were on the edge of our seat when his name was mentioned. He is a bit of a journeyman in where he's been. I've got some facts on him. So he's aged 27, turns 28 in March. The prop forward has been a bit of a journeyman in the NRL. Since 2016, Musgrove has played 27 games for Souths, 34 matches for West Tigers, and taken the field on 11 occasions with the Dragons. So he's playing, he's moving around, but he gets in the team. If you want to just jump on Wikipedia, we'll leave it at that. Have a look at his Wikipedia page.
I'd like to add a little more, not about Wikipedia. Last year, he played 11 times for St George's first team and 13 times for the reserves.
Right.
I'm not convinced, just on those stats. If you're struggling to get into St George, who are in the bottom half of the league, and you're 27, but then again, Thomas McCailey went back home and played one game, did he, for Gold Coast?
Yeah, so, I don't think he's so playing for them this year.
Yeah, so it's going to be about attitude with this guy. I've just got a question mark because I don't know enough about him.
How many games did Mike Cooper play for St George? Took him a while to get into the team. He wasn't there every week. I think he was maybe in his last year, but he wasn't.
He played very few
minutes.
He became an ever-present. He did become an ever-present.
Off the bench. Okay. So that's the one, isn't it? Thomas McCailey, Zane Musgrove. We're going with Better the Devil We Know there, are we? He's still got to impress us. Okay. Yeah. All right. Jordan Crowther, excellent pickup. Committed. Pity he's not 2 inches taller and a stone heavier, but he work rate was superb. And towards the end of the season, he was probably our most committed player, wasn't he, last year? Like, he was getting his head where he shouldn't get his head.
I think when you look at players who were perhaps a little bit limited, when we signed him on that short-term loan, I thought, he's not even playing. Actually, to be fair, similar to what I've just said about Zane Musgrove, I thought, he's not getting into the Wakefield team every week.
Right.
And yet he came here, and when you saw him play for us, you thought, how is he not getting into that Wakefield team?
Have they just, were they just heavy on second row forwards? Was that what it was at Wakefield? It wasn't one of the areas that they were struggling with?
Or maybe he'd fallen out with people. But in terms of effort, in terms of commitment, in terms of giving your all for the cause, excellent last year. Let's hope he can then add a little bit of composure and he will be an excellent squad player.
Okay. Brad Dwyer, age 30, same age as Daryl Clark. Dwyer returns to the Halliwell Jones for his second stint. Dwyer played 88 games in the Primrose and Blue between 2012 and 2017. He then made his way to Leeds for 5 years and then completed his journey east along the M62 to Hull last season. Oh, hang on, I've got Alan London on the phone. I should probably take this just a second.
Yeah, yes. Ask him about dummy runners.
Hello.
Hello.
We just wondered, had you any news of Annabelle?
She's still in Fiji, Dad. She's coming home today.
Is she all right?
I think they're all crook. They're all ill. But, yeah, she'll be home, and then I'm staying well away from her.
You think she's got COVID?
I think they've all got it. I think there's 100 of them got it.
Oh, my God. How is she, though?
Well, I think she's fine. I think she's, you know, kicking on. She was out till 4 a.m. last night partying, so I think she's okay.
All right, she's been vaccinated.
She's been triple vaccinated. She's all good. She's one of the good ones.
All right. Well, we'll ring you again tonight and see how she is.
Now, can you see my screen?
Yeah.
Hang on. Let me turn my screen around. Can you see that?
Yes.
We're just recording a podcast. You're live on the podcast.
Am I?
So, you know how blue, you're always very blue. So just tone the language down, first of all.
I'll tell you who I want. Do you know who I want to play scrum half?
Who?
Foolis.
Foolis?
Oh.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
You've been drinking?
I've watched him play fullback, and he made a lot of good moves. He can kick a ball, and I'm sure he'd take the line on more than that fella we've got.
Right. Okay.
So, do you see they're trying to get rid of Cassiano and Dudson, and that to go with Drinkwater? They'll go three Fitzpatrick signed.
Yeah, yeah. So getting rid of the Fitzpatrick signings.
Yeah.
Right.
All of them.
Right. Yeah, well, we'll wait and see. All right, well, you're all right. You're well. You're up late, aren't you? Oh, no, it's morning, isn't it?
It's evening.
Don't even know whether it's morning or evening. Gee.
Yeah, we're just going to bed.
Did you defrost the car? I heard the car was frozen over yesterday.
It was, but tomorrow morning I am playing tennis and the temperature is forecast at 2 degrees.
2 degrees and you're playing tennis. Now there's commitment.
Well, The court will be frozen.
Oh, well, you'll have fun then. Well, enjoy the slip over and the broken hip. Right.
Okay.
All right. Nice, we'll see you later.
Have a good podcast.
Right.
I enjoyed listening to it. Bye.
Bye. Well, I don't know if you caught that, Sam, but he's thrown Fitzpatrick and Dudson, Cassiano and Dishwater under the bus there. Or on the bus to witness. So
it's going to be a big full car. They're going to need a people carrier for that, aren't they?
Right, so Brad Dwyer...
You heard... Oh, never mind. You heard it here first.
Yes.
Next year, when number 7 is announced as Josh Theulis, Alan London.
Right, there we go. Put the mockers on it. Poor Alan London. Right, Brad Dwyer. Where are we at with Brad Dwyer? Now, a lot of people said that Dwyer is the replacement for Clark, but he's not. Clark is being replaced by Walker.
Correct.
And then, so it's all about the money, isn't it? It's about what have we done with the money that has gone from Clark? Like, has it been able to buy us Roderick Ty and Musgrove and Dwyer?
Well, you presume so. I find it very hard with Brad Dwyer because when he was playing for us, I never had an issue with his commitment and effort.
Yep.
And if, which I'll come on to when you get to your next signing, if he plays that way again for us and he does play, I'll not have an issue with his commitment and effort.
Right.
I just feel that he left because Danny Walker, who's a similar player, but in my opinion, a little bit better, came along. So all we've got is a guy to warm a spot on the bench in case Danny Walker gets injured, who is the same, but not quite as good. Same, smallish, darts from dummy half. There's no light and shade there. There's no difference. Yeah. Whereas when we had Darryl Clark and Danny Walker, there was a bit of a difference in those two players. You can play different games with them both.
Do we think there's anything in the rumours that Burgess has come in and not taken a fancy to Dwyer?
Yes.
And they were trying to offload him to Salford. I know we get a lot of rumours that come through, but you know, at times the club is more leaky than a shitty old radiator. So
yeah, I do. And I don't believe it's necessarily being disrespectful to Brad Dwyer as an individual. It's more, I believe, Burgess wants a point of difference in his two hookers.
I can't remember what I was listening to. I think it was a football podcast, and I think it was on about... Was it McManaman? Was it McManaman at Real Madrid? And when the... I can't remember. It may not have been McManaman, but a new coach came in only kind of weeks after McManaman had signed, or someone... One of these players went to Europe and signed and straight away took an instant dislike to this English player. So he never really...
Didn't fancy him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess it can happen, can't it? Someone new comes in and... Okay, all right. Wesley, how am I saying his surname? What are we going with here? Brunes?
I don't know either. And unless he's got some European heritage,
that's what I thought.
I'm just saying Brunes.
Right, all right. Wesley Brunes. Again, was able to watch a little bit of this guy on Australian television. He didn't play for Saints at all last year. This comes on to the last two of the signings, Brunes and also Sam Powell. Not good enough, is that, dare I ask to say, not good enough for the 2024 squads of Saints and Wigan, and therefore are offloaded?
Interesting. I can't... Young Wesley will leave his surname until we've heard someone officially say it.
Yeah.
Can't comment at all. He's a young lad.
He's big.
He could make it. Can't comment because I've not seen him play.
He's a bit Toby King. He's big.
Yeah.
Was big coming through the ranks. You know, the big lad at school.
Yes.
He's lacking a yard of pace.
But he is only 20.
But he's not going to suddenly inherit pace at 21.
No, I No, sorry, I appreciate that. But Toby King isn't pacey, is he?
No, but, that's why I'm sort of saying he's a Toby King.
But you could be strong and powerful. And again, in a league where we have very few world-class centres, if he can make himself a good centre, he can stand out in this league, couldn't he?
I think he'll be.
However,
I don't see him breaking into the team this year. No, I think we've suddenly bought 48 centres. So,
I think the thing will be, let's assume Stephen Ratchford is a utility, and maybe takes up that last spot on the bench most weeks because he can cover many places. And let's say that 5 or 6 weeks in, our first two main choice centres, what are we thinking? Are we thinking Connor Wrench and Toby King?
I think
are we thinking Roderick Ty and Toby King?
I don't think Ratchford's in the equation. I think the centres will be between Toby King, Connor Wrench and Roderick Ty. I think it'll be, although Ty can play second row or wing.
So this is where I'm going then. So let's say those three are going to play centre, and let's say two of them get injured or get banned. So we've got a spot in the centres free. It will be interesting whether Burgess just puts Stephen Ratchford in there to fill a hole for a week or two, or whether he gives Wesley a chance. That's when you'll know what he thinks of him.
He made the bench against Warrington Bruins, but he didn't play. He got on the bench once in the whole season. They clearly thought he was probably good enough to play against Stephen Ratchford. That's why they stuck him on the bench. And then Sam Powell.
Sam Powell, I am a fan of Sam Powell. I have always been a fan of Sam Powell. I think he's a tough competitor.
Yeah.
And if he's been signed because Sam Burgess doesn't fancy Brad Dwyer, if he's been signed as a backup to either sit on the bench or cover the occasional game when Danny Walker is injured.
Not scrum half?
Or maybe playing at scrum half if Drinkwater is either injured or not doing it, then for me, that is a very shrewd addition to the squad.
Right.
As an experienced,
good
quality backup player. But at 31... is not your future.
No. Okay. All right. And then the two players that remain in the squad are Josh Lynch and Jake Thulis. And then we've got two from the academy, Zach Bardsley Rowe and this Nolan guy, Nolan Toupet. Probably should just quickly talk about the academy tour that came down under. So I went to watch the first game against West Tigers, which was down at Mascot, down at the airport. Very hot day. I mean, not ridiculously hot, but up in the high 20s, playing on a paddock. And I was really impressed with the whole setup. Like, I came away really taken aback by the commitment of that team and all the mums and dads that were there. I spoke to lots of mums and dads there. They were all absolutely wonderful. There was a slight feeling, I thought, that they could have just possibly been given a little bit more of a kick from the club and funding. They'd all saved their coppers to get out to Australia in Sydney, and it's an expensive city, and I did feel sorry for a few of them, that just there was this feeling that they were digging into their savings to come out here and watch their kids. But Warrington played very well, and I mean, you get up close to it on a ground like that and you see how tough rugby league is. They looked far more organised than the first team. You know,
interesting.
On the sixth tackle, the high bomb went up, or they had a run around, and the commitment in the back line of taking the ball up and running hard, and so they were superb. They were superb. I did speak to one of the dads who said that. I said, you know, where is your son going? And he said, well, this is kind of the problem. Like, hardly any of them get picked up. And I think it's mainly about size. I just think a lot of them don't quite fill out to be big enough to play in Super League. They're brave, these kids. And also, it was mentioned to me, and I can't remember who it was. I got a friend who works down at, I can't think which hotel chain it was, but was highly commendable of the Warrington team, that said they all were superbly behaved off the park. Every one of them were polite and well-mannered. So a massive thumbs up to the academy side.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, that's where we are with that lot. Great to see. It's
good to, good to hear. Good to hear. And I think the thing you just said there about the parent who said not many of them get picked up, that was part of the reason I became a little disillusioned. I was involved with the Supporters Trust and the squad builder side of things for 12 years, where we support and we try and raise funds for the academies. And this is not really a fault of Warrington. This is more a fault of Super League and Rugby League. There isn't a good standard second tier
competition. The move up.
Because they either make it to Super League or virtually all of them are lost to Rugby League unless they go back playing for Crossfields. They don't tend to get picked up by Widnes and by Swinton and by, you know, those teams in the middle of the table of the Championship, the second tier.
Yeah.
And sadly, at the minute in our game, we're not strong enough there to keep these guys who may develop, because they're getting cut at the age of 19, where they might be. We've just been talking about Wesley Bruins. He's 20. He's been one of the lucky ones, if you like, who someone said he might develop by the time he's 22.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas with the old reserves, another used to hang around in the reserve to see, give them another two or three years to see if they develop and come in.
I had a lovely chat with Gary Carter. Gary Clark, Jason Clark's dad. He was a genuinely lovely fella. Absolutely. And one of the lads who was playing, I've known since he was a little lad for Warrington. And at the end of the game, you know, I didn't really want to climb the fence and go and get him, but Gary Clark was straight over the fence, ran up to him, brought him over to me. I won't say what the lad's name is, but first words he said to me was, "Bloody hell, Uncle Rob, they tackle harder out here." There was this, and you kind of think, well, you know, maybe it's worth sending a few of them this way and just playing at a higher standard every week. But it was great to see. Well, okay, that kind of sums up the individual players in the squad. And I guess the next question is this squad better than last year's squad, Sam?
I think it is a little bit better, yes.
A little bit? Just a little bit?
It's hard to... Well, I don't think anybody we've signed...
Is a world beater.
Is a world beater that's exciting me. All those years ago when we signed Jonathan Davis, and the next morning I went down and renewed my season ticket.
How are you with your season ticket? Have you got the new season ticket yet?
I've renewed my season ticket.
Oh, how much? Yes. What's the season ticket costing at Warrington these days?
Enough. Oh, I'm not giving away the exact price because then people know where to sit.
You've still got that tenner in your back pocket, haven't you? Still going all right with that?
Yes. I gave £5 away last year, but I'll do the same again next year.
All right.
Until I've spent 30 quid. Once I've spent 30 quid, that's enough. Okay. But we've just gone through. If we assume Toby King is a new signing, he's an upgrade. Lachlan Fitzgibbon is an upgrade. Jordan Crowther is an upgrade on the start of last year. And then Roderick Ty and Zane Mudgrove, we'll wait and see.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, that's enough about the squad.
Yeah.
The one thing we haven't mentioned, of course, is Samuel Burgess and his sidekick Martin Gleeson, who are there now. In comparison to Sheridan and Powell.
Yeah. Yeah.
Only 34, doesn't have his coaching badges. Let's ignore clicking on his Wikipedia page and let's just take him as a fresh start. You feel there's a buzz about the place, Sam?
Yes, I do. Not just from things I've heard from within the club. What I've heard from within the club, from the two or three people I still know in there is, well, the phrase, "we could have unleashed a monster," is onto the club every day, demanding this, wanting that, checking on this, checking on that. Right. He's full in. He's absolutely...
Because Matty John said his man management's superb.
Yeah. And when you see... What is so striking to me is when you see the pictures of the training pitch and you see these big Super League players and you see them stood next to the coach who towers over them and physically looks like he could put them in his place, he's not going to take any shit from any of them.
So he could batter the whole of the dressing room.
He could batter the whole of the dressing room. Maybe Vaughan.
Vaughan, yeah. Right, okay. Yeah. Which we've not had maybe before, Vaughan. Have we? We've not. No. Whereas Powell, what? Leon Hayes? That was kind of...
yeah. So what it then will come down to is, I suppose, a bit like Kevin Keegan when he was at Newcastle.
Jesus.
Yeah. So... Kevin Keegan got Newcastle playing fast, exciting football. But when it came to the crunch against Alex Ferguson, he didn't quite have the tactical nous to beat Ferguson.
Right.
So it will remain to be seen whether Sam Burgess has.
Have we found out where he's living? Have you been through his bins yet?
No. I've had two sightings of him in Knutsford.
Right. Two sightings in Knutsford. Okay. Mm. Is SSS still in Knutsford, or is that long gone?
Used I think like, that's long gone.
Is it?
That's
David Beckham, gone, David Beckham and Posh Spice used to get takeaway from SSS.
Did they?
No one else. They wouldn't deliver takeaway for anyone else, par Bex and Posh.
Oh, so they delivered for them, did they? Or did he come and pick it up?
No, I think they delivered. I think they delivered. So we tried to get a... we ordered a pizza the other night and I said to him, "Do you deliver?" He said, "No, we only do chicken and fish."
Oh dear.
It's got to that time, hasn't it? We're coming to an end. Right, fixtures, quickly.
Yes.
Now, this is higgledy-piggledy to say the least.
Oh gosh, yes, yes.
We'll quickly go, quickly, I'll run them off quickly in order. Dragons away, Hull home, Tigers home, Robins away, Broncos away, Dragons again at home, Rhinos away, Leopards at home, Devils away, Hull at home, Robins at home. Hang on, Dragons again away, three times. Oh, and then we finally play Wigan.
Yes.
And then at some point we play Saints, and we go home with quite a few away games. We go away at the Broncos in round 21, away in Magic Weekend against kind of Leeds, away at the Tigers, away at Leopards, home at Saints, away at Giants, home at Broncos. I missed a few in the middle there, but. Mm. Who's in charge of the fix? Is there a reason they've done it that way? Is there some mathematical marketing guru there that's gone, no, this is the way we're doing it because there's this and that going on behind the scenes? And Or is it just the fact it's an absolute clusterfuck?
Yeah, isn't it bizarre? We play Catalans three times before we play either St. Helens or Wigan. But... if we get off to the fast start, we got off to one last year, it didn't end well. Mm. But if we get off to a fast start, we have got a reasonably good first 12 fixtures.
Okay. All right.
There. Particularly those first five. First match, away, normally away at the Dragons, difficult. Mm. We won there twice last year, once in the cup, once in the league.
Mm.
And it's the first game. You know, anything could happen. Yep. But then at home to Hull, you'd expect to win that. At home to Castleford, when I say expect to win, if you're going to be anywhere in the league...
This is what it comes down to, isn't it? Like, it doesn't really matter the fixtures. You just got to win them. No matter what order. If you've got the mentality that I'm going to go out there and win them...
Correct.
I'm sure Djokovic doesn't look at the Wimbledon draw and go, "Oh, I've got a tricky one in the third round." He just goes out and pummels everyone, doesn't he?
But given this is a new coach, this is a new, an untried, untested coach.
Without his coaching badges.
Yeah. Hull Castleford and London, three of your first five fixtures. If you're sat there after five games, a minimum of 1-3, lost two, you're in the you're at least in the game. We might win four.
Right.
We might win four. We might win all five, but you're at least in the game.
I did a little stat on games we lost and how much we lost them by, and games we were losing under Price, we were losing by less than under Powell. There was a slide under Powell of games we lost. When we did lose games, we did capitulate in quite a few of the games under Powell. Didn't ever really happen under Price.
No, you're right. You're right. We capitulate is the correct word. We were in games. We were in games with Darrell Powell. Then, as soon as something went wrong, we fell apart.
Gave up.
Resilience. Oh. If we can bring that word back.
Do you know? I thought we were going to get through a whole episode without saying it, but you've said it.
So. You mentioned Price.
You've not caveated tonight, Sam. Is this the new you? Is this because Mrs. Sankey's away?
You mentioned a caveat earlier on. You brought one in, yeah.
I mean, it's been a good episode. We've had Alan London on. We've gone through the substance of the team.
Yeah.
It's all been there, hasn't it?
Predictions.
We can predict the future. Or resist the inevitable urge to try.
Good afternoon to you. Earlier on today, apparently, a woman rang the BBC and said she heard that there was a hurricane on the way. Well, if you're watching, don't worry, there isn't.
Warrington, but can I do it with a caveat, please?
This is it. Time for predictions. But before we go over to predictions, no, it's not Hal. It's Wilderspoolina.
Hello, my name is Wilderspoolina, and I am Hal's replacement. Thankfully, Hal is now surplus to requirements, and there'll be no more of his sexist tosh on this podcast. Right then, on to business. Based on rookie coach and a lackluster scrum half, Warrington will finish the regular season in sixth place.
Now, there she is, Sam. I mean, she seems a lot more authoritative than Hal, who, let's face it, was manically depressed.
He was getting a bit down, wasn't he?
And he was misogynistic. He was sexist. Yeah. He was a twat. He was a twat, let's face it. But she's no bigot.
Is he still on tour with Dennis in his company?
He probably is. That's probably why he's depressed. He could well be. We'll find out where he is. I'm sure he'll make an appearance at some point. But Wilderspoolina, not only is she giving a prediction, she's not bigoted because she gives reasoning behind her prediction. Mm. And she's pointed out a few there about not having a halfback and a little bit sceptical of Sam Burgess's coaching credentials. So she's gone for sixth. Now, apparently I did ask the What Bevan panel last year, and then I asked them again this week. I have no recollection whatsoever of asking them the first time, but it was pointed out by a few of them that were a little bit passive-aggressive, that I'm sending this again, it's not changed. Mark next to them. Sixth or better, what are we reckoning?
I'm saying better.
Oh.
It's off-season, we've not lost a game for several weeks, so I'm feeling quite positive. And statistically, through Super League, we finish in fifth place. So I'm going to say fifth, or with a good start, even fourth.
Ooh, okay.
Is that a caveat? Do I have to pick one or the other?
No. You can go for 4.5 if you want to.
I'll go for four.
Four. Okay.
Fourth.
All right. Yeah, I'm going to go fourth as well. I'm going to be positive and go fourth. I don't think we're good as Saints, Wigan or Catalans. And I think Catalans have bought well. And Wigan have
bought
well.
They've got a big turnover. They've got a huge change of players at Catalans. It'd be interesting how quickly you can get them together.
And Saints seem to be the sketchy one. They haven't bought as well, I don't think. And they're still looking for a player, aren't they? So, yeah, I'll go fourth then as well. So, end of the season. Sam Burgess back at Souths. After Souths have a bad start to the season and they swoop for him based on the fact we're running high, or Is he going to see out his 2 years at Est in Knutsford?
Est Knutsford.
Right. Okay, that's it. Following Wyre's first game of the season away in the south of France, we will hopefully, the trio of us, all be back for the podcast season. So until then, it's a so long from Sam.
All the best, everyone.
And it's a goodbye from me, wishing everyone a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. You've been listening to What Would Brian Bevan Say? You had a look at Musgrove's Wikipedia page. Jesus.
Allegedly.
Your mind at ease. In the Navy. Come on now, people, make a stand. In the Navy. Can't you see we need a hand? In the Navy. Come on, protect the motherland.